Good evening, everyone. This technology is always in the way, isn't it? We're going to talk about technology tonight. See what I did there? That was a good opening joke. You guys should have laughed more at that. Thank you. Okay. Well, while we're waiting for that to catch up, this was on my heart to share. This is, a topic that has been top of mind for me for a couple years because we have kids that are growing up in a different environment than what I grew up in, which was different than what my parents grew up in. And there was a lot of stuff that I think that, they missed just because everything happened so fast. And looking back, I think, well, there's probably some stuff that could have been done, to help protect and guide through that, but there was no context for it whatsoever. The advent of the internet and computers and stuff. We got our first computer when I was in sixth grade. So that was like life-altering. And then for me, I was a computer nerd. So that was like, you had this video games and then this internet. My dad worked for the local ISP, and so we got access to that pretty early. And but then now I've got like the same kind of technological jump that I'm having to deal with because my kids are coming of age. When we have computers that can like talk and think, which was something that was like not even really that common in sci-fi back then, because even in recent years, I've always been kind of interested in technology, I guess, and seeing even in recent years, the prevailing thought was like we are so far off from any kind of intelligence that's at the level of what we can get now for. $20 a month with a subscription. It's just happened like that, which I think is a theme of technology. Like if you've ever heard of Moore's Law, the amount of compute you can fit and within a given space doubles every 18 months. And so you're on this exponential curve. Last week we talked about compound interest, which was a good exponential curve. This one may be good because it creates some, economic impact that might be positive. But it's hard to keep up with, and I think that the progression of the end times is going to be like that too. It's going to be like fine, and all of a sudden you're going vertical, and everything's going to snap quickly. So I think that's kind of why a lot of people might be caught off guard or surprised by it, even if you're watching for it, because it's going to be quick. It's going to double down fast. So it's our job, to protect ourselves and our kids and to watch out for this. And it's cool to see the youth in here tonight. We'll talk about a lot of stuff that impacts all of us. But, I guess for some of us older people, it's too late. So there's still a chance for you guys. So good news for you. I think at the core of this conversation is the concept of attention. Like I was talking about earlier, the advent of the internet, it's a weird place because a lot of stuff is free. And I feel like whenever it first kind of came on the scene, there was a lot of free stuff on the internet because it was interesting and people were building stuff. And so there's a lot of stuff done, in people's spare time and whatnot. And we kind of got used to that and people didn't want to pay for things. And so they figured out other ways to monetize the kind of tools that they were using. And now we still see a lot of stuff on the internet is free. Like the stuff that we use every day, the social media apps are all free. Some of the AI tools to a certain degree are free. A lot of this stuff is free. And, nobody ever got rich, especially as rich as the technology companies are getting, by having a product that was free, right? And so that tells us that the tool that you're using is not the product. So what's the product then? You're the product. your attention is the product, and they're selling that product to companies through advertising. And that's not necessarily evil. Advertising's been around for a long time. But what's changed in this is that we can now gauge through these tools how effective these advertisements are. And we can do all kinds of cool stuff like A-B testing, where we'll show this cohort advertisement A and this one advertisement B, and which one performs better. And they have a lot of information about you, and so they can match you with demographic data and make sure you see something that appeals for you, appeals to you, and the advertisements are getting really specific. We have, at my work, a pretty large advertising budget, and most of it is dedicated to digital because you can actually prove the ROI on it. When you have a billboard or a radio ad, it just kind of goes out there and you have no idea how well it's working. The metrics are soft and they're trailing, but whenever you get digital ads, you can say, I got this many clicks, this is how many cents I paid per click, these are the kind of people that I'm getting. You get all of that information in there. And so that's how all of this works, and this creates an incentive for these technology companies to try to find more of their product, right? More of your attention. And so what's a good way to do that? Well, it's to make the product more addictive. And that's not a new concept either. We're basically dealing with like the next wave of Philip Morris. It seems like smoking has really gone by the wayside a lot, but now we just have something to replace it with, which is, walking around with your phone in front of you is more pervasive than cigarettes were like back in the 80s and 90s. But it's the same kind of thing, you know, have an addictive product and people will use it a lot. So that's the incentive and that's the process. And it has a negative effect on us because it creates an addiction in us. And so we have to be super careful. And I really like this verse in Ephesians. See that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. And so we need to be very cautious and careful and mindful about the way that we're interacting with the whole world, with everything. But this is a particular way that can be kind of tricky. And so it requires intentionality and it requires a lot of discipline as well. The most obvious, I guess, form of addiction in this sphere is going to be smartphone addiction. And we're all probably, to some degree, addicted to our smartphones. I just got an alert there and looked at it. So isn't that funny? Yeah. I was thinking about this a lot for the last couple of weeks, and isn't it weird, like, when you're at, like, you realize the kind of neurological reaction responses that you have to this stuff. Like, when you're at a table, and you have your phone, like, maybe sitting down, and someone else does too, and a phone vibrates, and you look at it, and it's not yours, it's like, oh. Because your brain is expecting whatever that little dopamine hit is from seeing that thing. And it doesn't even have to be valuable, but you just, I guess, it creates like a gap, and then you got to close the loop to look at it. And then so when you hear the vibration and it's not yours, it's just like you don't get the response. I don't know. Start paying attention to that stuff. It's really weird, like the physical responses you have to your devices. But anyway, addiction here. This came from a report that I found by a neurological group. And I thought it was kind of interesting because it reflects, I think, a lot of the characteristics that our society has going on right now. Anxiety. There seems to be just a massive amount of anxiety. And I think a lot of it is because we have exposure to more information than we should have. I think also, you know, Satan's ramping things up, which we expect. And so when we get to kind of see how frantic the darkness is, that causes anxiety. But then just this constant focus on ourself also creates this too. And so you see this kind of being a fruit of society, and I'm not saying that this is the only source of it, but it's definitely exacerbating the problem. But I mean, does anybody not think that people are more anxious than they were 20 years ago? Like, it's obvious. Like, that's a problem that people have. Depressive symptoms, poor sleep, weakened cognitive function. I won't say too much on that, but I think that's pretty prevalent in our society too. Reduced attention span. There was another study that I looked at comparing, I think it was from 2010 to 2020. They were measuring attention spans, I think in young people, and they had reduced from about 12 seconds to 8. So I don't know what's more surprising is that big drop or that it was only 12 to start with, because that's pretty brief. And we see now the content is being made for those shorter attention spans. Like, we've moved off of YouTube into things like Reels and TikTok and stuff. And, like, how long is a TikTok video? Are they 15 seconds? No one wants to admit that they look at TikTok. They're pretty short. And Reels are like that, too. And it's because people can't attend for, 30 minutes anymore. They don't want to. They want to read that tweet that's 144 characters and go on to the next thing. The emotional reliance on smartphone use. You can see this when you've got these iPad kids and you take it away and they have kind of a meltdown. We do too. Has anybody, like, in the last couple of years, like, been without their phone for like a day? I broke my screen, this was a couple years ago, and I remember dropping it off, like, to get fixed at a place, and they were like, "We'll be done tomorrow," and I'm like, "Whoa, this is gonna be a trip." I drove home. I was like, "Man, if I, if you break down or whatever, you're just gonna walk home, I guess. I don't know." Nothing bad happened. It was kind of relaxing. I did keep like going, "Where's my phone?" Anyway, lower self-control too. We see this trend toward instant gratification from the technology and in other ways, and I think that's been a real detriment to people, not being able to wait for things, not being able to delay satisfaction or pleasure, and it reduces your ability to have, long-term thinking. And so these are all addiction in general, but then specifically we see smartphone addiction kind of having these traits. And we all know that it has a negative effect on us, but it's not just smartphones. There's other things too. I did want to get into a couple specific topics. I do have some things to say specifically about video games too. I think a lot of parents probably wonder, like, how should I police and monitor this for my kids? I have what I think is probably, hopefully, a nuanced approach to it, and some information that I think will be helpful. So I don't think video games are necessarily bad. I actually play them myself sometimes. But I think there's aspects of them that are positive and negative, and there's some that are helpful and some that are harmful. And so I'll explain why I think they can be good and why I think they can be bad. The first thing is video games are like a form of simulation, which we know is useful for training. You guys might have had some kind of simulations at work, whether they were practical or digital, where you learn how to do something, and you can do it kind of in a safe environment with low risk. And there's a lot of video games, especially older style ones, I would guess, or genres that have been around for a while, that help you learn strategy and management. So you can learn things like resource planning, investment, labor allocation, stuff like that. There's even, some where you can learn some like factual information like history and things like that if they're themed. And those can be really helpful. And I'll, let me just show you an example of that. So there was a game that I used to play when I was a kid. It was called Roller Coaster Tycoon. And the hook was that you designed your own theme park, which I thought was really cool when I was 9 years old. And so you set up and you build your little roller coasters and stuff, and you got all the rides, and you set prices on everything. And you had goals for each sort of level, and they were based on like customer satisfaction and financial metrics. And I fired this up probably like a year ago to show my kids, and couldn't believe what I saw, because I popped open the finance screen, which like lets you kind of track how you're doing, and I was like, this is a profit and loss statement, like in a game that a 9-year-old was playing. You know, by necessity of wanting to have fun, like you learn how to do stuff like this. And so I never knew that I was learning like about market demand and finance and all of that kind of stuff, but it was Trojan horsed in as a fun game. And so I deal with this stuff every day now. And so it was something that introduced me to a lot of like hard concepts, and then kind of teaches you how to think a little bit. And so this was a positive influence on my younger self. There's also a component of social connection in them that can be positive. This gets complicated when you're online a lot, because it can kind of go past the point of being, you know, wholesome social interaction to just like having a fear of missing out, or having a strong drive to, you know, be with your friends all the time, which is an artifact of being young. And that's just kind of part of it. So you have to learn how to regulate that when you're in your teens. But it's something that you can get together and do in person too, which is how we used to have to do it back in the olden days. And so I think that's positive. And I have many fond memories of doing that with my friends when I was younger. And that can be a positive thing. Something I don't have up here is also skill improvement. So I think that this is a way to do this. I think the best way to do this is actually by learning a musical instrument. But you can get it in like a cheaper way in video games that doesn't have quite as well-rounded of benefits. But trying something, failing, and then trying it again and improving is helpful, not for the skill maybe so much, especially in this application, but for learning how to improve and learning that, oh, like internalizing the concept that if I push through this, I'm eventually going to overcome this. And that's super helpful to learn for all kinds of things in life. And you can kind of build that muscle a little bit with certain kinds of like skill-based games. Like I said, music is a much, much better way to do that. Hit up Dave Reitz sometime, and he'll teach you how to do that. Just kind of a test from Philippians 4:8. Oh, I didn't bring all my sheets. Let's see. I've got a bunch of Bible verses that I'm going to need. This verse in Philippians basically gives us kind of a test to see what we want to put in our hearts and minds. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. And so that brings me to, the bad parts of them. And there's things that are not wholesome and lovely that we can get exposed to. And the first one links back to what we talked about earlier with addiction. And so now some games that are not, rigorous or story-driven or technical have come out that are supported by advertisement and or by microtransactions. And the goal of them is to keep you playing them as much as possible. It's not to have fun. Like, that's the original purpose of video games. the new purpose of some of these is to keep you attending to them, to have your attention. And so I've labeled them dopamine drips. And so these are the kind of games where you kind of do the same thing over and over again. And then there's this sense of like progression or upgrading where you're kind of doing the same thing, but each time you kind of go through a cycle, your spaceship or whatever gets a little bit better and you get a little bit more of whatever bogus currency they have. And there's just this like, there's this payoff that happens in a couple minutes where you've made it to the next thing and then you're driving toward the next thing. And it's just this endless cycle of progression that becomes addictive. And you guys know what I'm talking about. They're like not, they don't look good. They don't, they're not like particularly fun. They're just like oh, this is kind of a dopamine drip. And those kind of things I don't like very much. I don't know the names of any of them. They're usually on your phone. Like you don't sit down and play these things. So that's one thing I think is good to stay away from. The other one is anything with adult content. So a lot of, you see this more now because the people that grew up with video games are now adults and they want like complex games that have in-depth stories. And you'll see that in a lot of like RPGs where you've got like an open world. And it's becoming more and more common to have pretty adult themes in a lot of these, and not just violence, but sexual content too. You know, if you're policing that for your kids, I would watch out for that. Lots of the AAA games that, you know, are really long gameplay will have that kind of content in it. So be sure to look at that. There's some great websites that are good for reviewing content and just seeing kind of what's in it. I don't know for games. I think Common Sense Media has it for games. IMDb has it for movies. So if you guys are ever looking like, hey, I don't know if we should watch this, because the ratings are not always geared toward what your family's sensitive to. In the parental section of any movie on IMDb's website, they will tell you everything that happens in the movie, including what specific curse words and stuff are in it. And so if you're okay with this and not with that, you can kind of review that and get a good sense of what you're going to be exposed to. So that's a pretty handy tool that we use. And it's pretty reliable, I think. Another thing to watch out for, I think, is isolation. And this comes with addiction too. You know, it's a lot of work to have actual relationship and friends. And it's really easy to play video games. And so keep an eye on yourself and on your children, how much they're displacing other things like friendships with this sort of activity. You know, and I mentioned before the social aspect of video games. You can make a lot of like internet friends with this medium, and that could be okay. But you as a parent are probably not equipped or don't have any way to police those relationships at all. So you don't know that person on the other end, how old they are, what their deal is. You know, they have a common interest with your child. They may be a child themselves. They may not be. And so that's pretty risky. And so at the very least, you need to be having conversations with your kids. And young people, you need to be thinking about what this person's worldview is. They might say things that are helpful or seem wise or funny or whatever, but they could be crazy, or at least not have the same values as you do. And then you have to really weigh out, like, okay, you know, I'm listening to them about this subject. Test them in some way. Like, what do you think? You know, the things of the Lord. And if they're not interested in it, like, is that someone you would expose yourself to normally? You might consider whether or not you want to be internet friends with that person. Then parents, keep an eye on those people, because there's relationships that can be formed that you don't have any visibility into. And so that's a risk, and you need to, you know, mitigate that or be aware of that. On the same kind of note, I was listening to a podcast about this, and this lady, it was a psychologist that wrote a book about screen time. was talking about an interview she did with a young person, or maybe it was the parent, and the kid said something along the lines of, "I really like playing Fortnite, but I don't know if I want it to be my hobby." Fortnite's a video game, for those of you who don't know. And I thought that was good to compare that activity, or contrast that activity with a hobby, because it sits in the same place that a hobby would. So let's talk about hobbies a little bit and how these are kind of getting displaced in our society and what we might be losing as a result of that. I think hobbies are fantastic. Of course, anything can get overextended, or, you know, too much of a good thing is a bad thing. You know, I just came up with kind of some of these, like reading builds focus and depth. It increases your attention span. You get exposed to new ideas and environments and concepts that you wouldn't otherwise. I don't have to plug reading too hard. Like, everybody generally thinks reading is a pretty good thing. But where you may have read before, now there's this other thing that competes for our time. And we stare at it for hours a day, and it sits in the same place that reading would normally. It's also a fantastic hobby to have before you go to bed, because it makes you sleepy. Your phone keeps you up. You know, you've got this blue light shining in your face. You've got this, like, beam of information while you're trying to, or while you should be going to sleep, keeping you awake, reminding you about, like, all the bad things that are happening in the world, increasing your anxiety. And then it's like, man, I didn't sleep very well last night. It's like, well, what'd you do before bed? You looked at your phone for 2 hours. I find that I can read for about 7 minutes in bed before, like, I got to put it down. Like, the book's going down involuntarily or not. That is a huge, I think, benefit to sleep is reading before bed. So art is kind of the opposite, right? It's not you consuming something, it's you creating something. And we, you know, mimic our creator through that, because he's creative. He created everything. And so this is just another thing that gets displaced. Nature as well. Nature has a soothing, calming effect, a kind of recentering effect on people. And unless you're in nature with your phone. This is something that's getting displaced. And then I wrote here tinkering. So, like, I think this was a lot more common. And it may be partially because of being displaced by things like video games and digital stuff. And it's probably also partly economic. But, like, people used to, like, when they were in high school, would, like, work on their car. And I don't think people do that as much anymore. But things like, you know, motorcycles or cars or woodworking or knitting or whatever kind of, like, thing that stimulates your brain and your hands, you know, builds up these connections and is a creative way to improve yourself and make something and actually be a producer instead of just, like, consuming. Then it has really practical applications too, like, you know, if you're always messing with your car, you're probably going to be able to fix it later. Carpentry and other things like that. And the last thing I think that we've displaced is boredom. And I am a big fan of boredom. I think boredom is fantastic. I think kids are not bored enough. If our kids ever complain about being bored, I just don't care. That's great. Go find something to do. That's when you had the most fun as a kid, doing something, you know, weird. Like, you don't have a lot of, like, really fond memories of, I don't know, watching TV or something. But there was always this thing that you did, like, when you jumped in the creek, or we built this dam to, you know, try to block the creek up, or, you know, that kind of stuff that you remember, like, vividly doing with your friends. That kind of stuff is all a child of boredom. And even on car rides, like, we have a screen in our car. We don't ever let them use it, except on, like, super long road trips. But I remember when I was probably like 6 or 7. We went on one of the only vacations we went on when I was a kid to North Carolina, and we drove the whole way. in to entertain us. I remember my mom got this like Connect Four game. It was like a travel Connect Four. And I don't know who we're supposed to play with because I think my brother was like 3 and my sister was an infant. So that lasted me till like, I don't know, St. Charles. And then the rest of the way was just staring out the window and seeing, you know, what went by. And I think that's fantastic for people. You think and you imagine. That's getting displaced. And I even see like people with their earbuds in all the time now. Like, don't do that. That's not good. Someone else is thinking for you, right? The time that you would spend thinking about things or observing things or wondering is just somebody preaching at you all the time. You need to have time where there's like nothing. I'm really serious about that. That I think is really dangerous, and people are learning losing the ability to be able to think and be creative because of that. You shouldn't have that much no one should have that much influence over you, including audiobooks and things like that. Even if they're wholesome podcasts. And even music. Sometimes you just need to have turn your phone off, turn CarPlay off or whatever you got, and just cruise and think. See what you come up with. Okay, so back onto the topic of phones. This is a big one. This impacts us all. Why is that funny? I saw this on Twitter on my phone. I think it's funny because we know that it's so stupid how much we spend time on it. Like, we know, like, that's not what I'm going to want to do in the afterlife, right? So, like, why is it so important now? And, like, I'm preaching to myself because I would like to be on my phone way less than I am. So I'm not sitting up here pointing down at any of you guys. I think it's there's a time element to this that I think is important to talk about. So our brains are constantly developing. But when we're younger, there's a little bit more plasticity to them. And particularly before you're 25, your brain is a lot more moldable, and you're cutting these neural pathways in it. So think about like a grassy area, like you've probably seen at a park, where there's a sidewalk, and then there's some, for some reason, you know, you want to get from this place to that place, and there's no path. And it's like a common thing, like maybe there's a gate or something here. And people will cut across it. And then you get this kind of like worn path where people have taken a shortcut. So you've got this kind of groove cut in. And your brain is like that. The more you travel down particular paths of thinking, the more the groove gets cut in there. And it's easier to kind of stay in that rut. And some of those things are good. Like that's, like we talked about learning music before. Like that's one of those ruts. Like you want that in your brain, so you've got the path. You know, you want to have that path for your multiplication tables in your brain so that you can do math without having to, like, sing a song or use your calculator or whatever. So those things are good, like we're made to have those things, but there are also ways that we can form addictions. You know, like smoking or spending time on our phone or whatever, you just get that draw. And it's not like like with smoking, for example, I read a lot about this too. It's not just the like the nicotine that you crave, but there's a ritual that goes with it too. And there's actions and stuff. And that's all tied together. And it's really hard to kind of break out of that. And so these grooves get cut into your brain, and they're more likely to be cut at younger ages, or they get cut faster. And so you have to be really careful with what you expose yourself to, because this is the kind of stuff that's going to impact you for the rest of your life and the things that you're going to be drawn to. And I think this is particularly a dangerous time to get access to like anything that's addictive. And smartphones are probably the most addictive thing that we deal with on a regular basis that's been normalized. I would encourage parents to delay the whole smartphone exposure just as long as you possibly can. I think that, you know, communication is fine, but exposure to the addictive side of it is not. And there's lots of ways to get the safety aspect out of it, because that's what I hear a lot of people being concerned about it, like contact and stuff like that. You can get that with a flip phone, and nobody likes hanging out with the flip phone. And so those teens are going to keep that thing in their pocket so no one sees it. And it's just not as, like, it's not as stimulating. Like, there's not, you know, you play the one game that's on it that comes with it for, you know, 30 minutes, and then you're never going to do that again. It's hard to see stuff. Like, it's just not, it's not attractive. And we'll talk about some ways to kind of combat that later. But the verse, the principle that we get from Romans 12, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So let's get, you know, kind of dark here for a little bit. I think one of the biggest risks with cell phone usage for younger people is an earlier exposure to pornography. So the things that I worry about with phones are mostly exposure to pornography and having something that's really addictive at a young age, where you, A, can't regulate yourself very well, and B, you're forming those neural pathways. This was from a study that Common Sense Media had on their website. 73% of teen respondents that they polled, age 13 to 17, have watched pornography online, and more than half reported for seeing pornography by the time they reached the age of 13. And from what I can tell, it seems like the age of first exposure is coming down. And then I think also the frequency of exposure at a young age is ramping up too, because it used to be really hard to get, there's a magazine that you find in the trash or something like that, and that's how people would get exposed to it, and that would happen like once in your childhood. Well, now we've given everybody these devices that have access to it anywhere at any time, and it's really hard to police them. It's hard to block, and it's hard to audit, and it's easy to hide stuff. And so that's a kind of exposure that I'm really worried about. And so you've got the risk of the smartphone exposure, and you've got the risk of the pornography exposure. And this is like, this is a pandemic in our nation, very high addiction rates, even in professing Christians. And so this is something that, like, you're really playing with fire when you have this device. And so you need to be you need to consider whether or not you want to give that to that young person. And just because they already have it doesn't mean you can't take it away. Doesn't mean you can't backpedal on it. This is a serious matter, and I think it's an invasion opportunity for the enemy. And so I would encourage you to kind of be weird in this way as a Christian. When I've talked and read about this subject, one of the kind of, there's a couple of objections that you hear a lot. And the biggest one that I hear is, like, I don't, especially from, like, women, because they're more, like, the moms are more empathetic, right? And so the kids can kind of manipulate that sensitivity, and they're more subject to being manipulated in that way. But the kids don't want to miss out, and then the parents don't want the kids to miss out on the kind of social interaction that you get by virtue of having this device. And I remember being very driven, like, I didn't have a cell phone when I was a kid, but we had Messenger, right? So there was one computer in the house back in the olden days, and once you dialed up to the internet, you can sit in front of it in the family room where everybody could see you and you could talk to your friends. And I was just, like, obsessed. Like, you wanted to talk. You saw them all day in school. you didn't have anything else to talk about because you experienced the same thing, and then you would go home and you would talk to them online, and I'm sure that still happens today. But anyway, I'm digressing. My point is that I would encourage you to not succumb to the demand to be part of the culture. And I would remind you too that the culture is a mess. You don't want your kids to conform to what everybody else is doing, right? They're losing their minds out there. Like, they're addicted, they're depressed, they're confused, so much confusion. Like, anxiety is off the charts. Miserable. These people are miserable. And so protect your kids from that by not giving them what they want. They have no idea what they need in life. They're going to desire that access. And gauge for yourself, you know, what they're able to handle. But it's just know that you're playing with fire with that kind of exposure and a device that can be that addictive. And then we're called to be different. You know, these two verses in John 15, if you belong to the world, it would have love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, and that is why the world hates you. So we're called to stand apart, and I have no problem being weird for being like this. And I hope that you guys are encouraged to be weird too. And you know, on that note, I don't really think that you're missing out on much. You've got the fear of missing out, but the actual thing you're missing out on is not much. In C.S. Lewis's book, The Screwtape Letters, you have Screwtape talking to Wormwood, so it's two demons talking about how to tempt somebody. And he's encouraging, the demon is encouraging his nephew that you want to get him to sin, but you don't want them to have any fun. Because there's some sins that can, I guess, be more, you know, pleasurable. But Satan doesn't even want that for you. He wants you to be in sin and miserable. And we can see that most of the people in the world that don't have Christ are not, it's not like they're like, living it up and having a blast. They're all miserable. And we don't want to have any part in that. Dostoevsky said it much more succinctly. Your worst sin is that you have destroyed and betrayed yourself for nothing. And then the principle here from Proverbs, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without all walls. And so we need to exercise our muscle of self-control. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit, right? Self-control. And try to be different from the world. And I'll also add, too, that from the practical matter, like I've also heard, we need them to have access to these tools and maps, and what if they get lost? And, you know, I think, like, GPS isn't even that new. And, like, is anybody here in Mexico, Missouri, because they got lost as a youth, like older people that didn't have, you know, did you ever like get permanently lost? Like, you found your way home, like it's fine, they'll figure it out. That'll make them more resilient and they'll have good stories to tell. So I don't think anybody's going to look back on life. Like, if you got majorly lost, you know, I guess you look back on that kind of stuff like with fondness, like, oh, we really got in a scrape or whatever. You don't look back and think about, like, what you looked at on Twitter a year ago. You have no idea. Like, it's just, it's in and out. It's in and out. So it's not worth anything. I'm not doing well on time. So some practical stewardship ideas here. Having designated spots for devices that you can kind of close them away whenever you're having family time. Black and white settings for the phone. Has anybody ever put their phone on black and white? Like, what does that do for you? Yeah. Like, it's like eating sugar-free candy. You just have it, and it's like, this is, it's weird. So You guys should try it. I've got the next slide is 2 QR codes with instructions on how to do it. But go through it for a day. You're gonna. It's interesting because it'll reveal to you how much you look at your phone, because you're gonna pop it up and you're gonna be disappointed, and then you're gonna think, wow, I'm really addicted to this thing. So you should definitely try it. It's very fascinating. Even just do it for a day. Have a clear policy. If they do have phones, you need to have a clear policy about where it's allowed, when, have timers for it. They don't need to have, like, you don't need to have it at home. Who are they going to call, you know? The argument for it being, like, critical for safety or whatever, like, that doesn't apply in your house, right? So you can put it in a drawer. I think it's really important, too, for kids. So maybe, like, you don't allow your children to have phones, and they go over to somebody else's house, and they do. Like, that's something that you're going to have to deal with. And I think it's okay. It is absolutely okay, because it's your child at stake, right, to ask people, what's your phone policy? What kind of parental controls do you have in the house? Like, can people take the phone up to their room? Like, what do you do with it at night? All of this stuff, because you can have a perfect plan at your house, and then they go somewhere else, and then, boom, you've got all this exposure. So everyone in here, promise not to be upset if someone asks you that, and then promise to be bold enough to ask other people that. And so if any of your kids ever come into my house, ask me all the questions you want about phones. And I found that, like, when kids come over with phones, they're pretty cool about being respectful. But most of my kids' friends are from church, so they might have, like, a, you know, tremors or something after a couple hours. I'll have to come down and check it. But so if you want to know how to set your phone to black and white, that's how to do it. Those are two videos that kind of show you how to do that, depending if you have an iPhone or an Android. Or you can text me later, and I'll send them to you. So in a practical matter, I want to talk a little bit about, like, how we do this. So parental controls on the internet, very important to do. And I think it's important to do for, if you don't have any kids at home, put parental controls on, because we've all, like, accidentally gotten to the wrong place before. And it just stops that kind of stuff. And so there's kind of two ways that we need to take a layered approach to this. The one is you need to have it for your whole home. So this will typically be a product for your internet service provider, and it'll be on your router. And so everything that comes, you know, in and out of the house has to pass through that device, and that's where you need to have the protection. Because if you've got it on, like, the family computer, and then someone else uses a different device, it's not protected, right? And so you need to have something that all of the information in your house that's coming and going passes through that filter. So that would be something that you would most likely get from your service provider. And then if you've got specific devices that are leaving the home, they're going to depart from the umbrella of that protection we just described. And so you need, if you're going to give people phones, they need to have something on them to protect them when they're out and about, either on the cellular network or on other people's houses. And so that's a layered thing. You can't have, like, half coverage there. And so I would be, you know, this is not something that shouldn't be a secret in the house. Just, hey, we've got these filters on. And it'll also give you alerts, too, about what kind of activity, so you can discuss that whenever that, you know, comes up. But just be open about it. And I would encourage you not to have a casual attitude toward this. You can't just, like, talk to them and say, you know, well, if you see it, you know, just let us know and whatever. You should have that conversation, too. But you need to be vigilant to try to keep that stuff out of the hands, because it is very addictive and dangerous. So I would encourage you in that way. I think I'll probably stop it there and see if we've got any questions. If nobody has anything, I've got another topic, but we're getting really close to 8 o'clock. So, yes, sir.